Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well will be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die young.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Walden. Welcome to Ask the Blood Detective. Today's topic is a very important one. It's about the stress response. Now, for those of you new to the show, you know that Ask the Blood Detective is a bit different in terms of perspective. One of my goals in providing these detailed discussions is that you, the audience, can critically think about each topic so that you don't merely have to accept generalizations that you might hear. So for example, I've done shows on acid-base balance, or what's known as pH in the body. And rather than accepting the general concept that we should be alkaline, most of us have heard that who are educated enough to be listening to a show like this, we're basically told that alkaline is good, we should all be alkaline. But as I discussed during the pH Lies show, it's not that simple when you look beyond the surface, meaning that we should be alkaline or have an alkaline pH in our mouths for starch digestion. We should have an acid pH in our stomach for protein digestion. We should have a slightly left of neutral blood pH at about 7.4. And our urine should be on the acidic side as well. So the concept of we should be alkaline doesn't have a whole lot of meaning. Ask the Blood Detective is about just that. How you can become your own blood detective and think critically so as a healthcare consumer, you can choose better various healing options and also preventative strategies. I've also done shows on detox, like my show Detox Deception, where I review many of the common so-called detox methods, which ones work and which ones do not. So again, cutting beneath the surface. I think you get the idea. Now, today's show topic is on stress. And you know, what's interesting about the word stress is that prior to the 1950s, the term stress was an engineering term, which, obviously referred to the different types of forces upon different materials in engineering. It was a Dr. Hans Selye, who is considered today, he's known as the father of stress, because he did some of the groundbreaking work on how the body deals with stress. So he took the term stress from engineering. He was the very first health professional, very first person that applied the term stress to the human body. Now, when I speak about stress to those that seek me out for healthcare, they initially think of stress as psychological stress, the stress of life, meaning emotional stress. And that, of course, is true, that there is a type of stress which is called emotional stress. But as you might imagine, beyond emotional stress, there's physical stress, the stress of simply being exposed to gravity on planet Earth, which causes what's known as a wear and tear on our physical structure. And there's electromagnetic stress, there's various types of chemical and toxic stress, there's the stress of repair. So one might think of disease and dis-ease, which is that phase between health all the way to disease. In the center of that spectrum is dis-ease. So I think it's fair for us to at least begin this discussion of stress by recognizing, number one, that it's much more than just emotional, and stress applies to any factors that play upon our human existence. And the whole philosophy of the show today is for us to have a greater understanding of what stress is, what stressors are, and I've named just some of them just a moment ago, and how they play upon the human body, and how each of us has a unique susceptibility to stress. And in the end, you might say that disease is the final result of the body's inability to keep up with repair based on our exposure to different stressors, such that the disrepair of the body exceeds the repair. And that would be considered, let's say, a negative, ultimately a negative stress. And to take this a step further, you know, the human body has an amazing ability to maintain its own health, particularly when it's provided with the right amounts of healthy signals. But when harmful signals are removed and appropriate signals are enhanced in the body, our cells, tissues, and our organ systems are able to repair. But as I've said, and to say it in a slightly different way, when the harmful stressors or harmful signals outweigh our body's innate resiliency, that's when we have disease and we succumb to the adverse effects of stress. So any discussion of stress, at least from my perspective, means that any chronic disease that you can think of, whether it's arterial sclerosis or cardiovascular disease, whether it's osteoarthritis or degeneration of our physical structure, our joints, for example, whether it's Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, which are degenerative changes in specific parts of our nervous systems, whether we're dealing with type 1 or type 2 diabetes or any number of cancers. Ultimately, you can think of all of these diseases as the tissues being overwhelmed by stressors. So any comprehensive natural healing philosophy or approach, at least from the Blood Detective perspective, must somehow increase our resiliency factors. In other words, our body's innate ability to effect repair so that we can overcome stressors in particular body systems. So if a person cannot or fails to overcome stress, let's say in a certain part of their brainstem, they might suffer from Alzheimer's disease. If their bodies cannot suffer from specific stressors that attack what's known as the white matter in the nervous system, a person might be diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. If another individual's joints and the healing capacity of the body to repair those joints is exceeded by, let's say, gravitational stress, wear and tear stress, improper exercise, injuries, inflammation, then we have diseases of this or that tissue. So all diseases, every one of them, are examples of stressors that have impacted specific parts of our bodies. And in my mind, I have a simple visualization. When I think of diseases or dysfunctions that my individual patients have, I think about the nutrition that would support those tissues to effect repair and therefore to overcome the effects of chronic stress. Now, here's the thing about stress, and this is a concept I'll be going over in more detail throughout the course of today's show, is that emotional stress, for example, every thought, feeling, and emotion we have affects and is caused by and results in changes in neurotransmitters in the nervous system. It's the neurotransmitters that allow us to perceive and interpret psychological stress. And when we have physical stressors like pain, inflammation, degeneration, cancer, whatever the condition is, we also impact our nutrition, which also impacts our psychology. So physical stressors and emotional stressors are not merely just connected. You hear that a lot. Oh, you know, the mind, has everything to do with healing other areas of the body. Of course it does. And we sometimes semantically use the wrong terminology. We'll say there's a connectedness. Everything's connected. Well, the term connection implies that we've connected things, but the truth is they're one thing. We cannot have any thought, feeling, or emotional, or experience any psychological stress on that level, the emotional level, without having a corresponding biochemical change, which affects our physical structure. And the reverse is also true. But since today's show is focused on a greater and deeper appreciation and description of how stress affects the body, and specifically how nutrition can counterbalance the effects of stressing or stressors, even aging, the aging process is a stress. Don't lose sight of the fact, which I'm sure you wouldn't, that there are many other ways of managing healing in the body. But what I like to talk about is the role that nutrition plays. So that's our focus today. It's not about yogic meditation or any other sort of mental emotional exercise. Although I'll be describing how mental emotional effects upon the body specifically impact certain areas of our stress response, I'll be talking about how nutrition can counterbalance that. So there's what's known as physiological resiliency, which is basically the capacity of the body, every cell, tissue, and organ system to withstand changes in our health maintenance. Examples of these physiologic resilience responses would be, for example, the ability of arteries to dilate when blood flow increases, the ability to for the body to burn glucose to affect energy to deal with what's known as the fight or flight response, or your body's ability to manage, either increase or decrease your cortisol so that you can deal with a particular immediate stress and or chronic stress. Let me back up for a moment. The stress response that was outlined by Dr. Hans Selye, the practitioner, the researcher that I alluded to earlier, the one who was known as the father of stress, he outlined stress in three basic categories: the alarm reaction, the resistance reaction, and the exhaustion phase. What he described and what is accepted today, and I think makes quite a lot of sense, is that initially, the body will respond to a stressor. Again, whether it's psychological, physical, emotional, mental, electromagnetic, toxic, aging, genetic, you name it. Such that there is an immediate alarm reaction. Blood pressure, blood flow increases, adrenal hormones increase. The fight or flight response, as Hans Selye described it, is a necessary reaction of the body to deal with immediate and new stressors. All of those different physiologic changes, what we just called physiologic resilience just a few minutes ago, not only do happen at the initial stages of stress, but they must happen, and they're needed so that our bodies can respond to the stressor. Now, some stressors don't simply come and go. They might linger for a while, a toxin exposure, a very difficult job, physical stress. And what happens is the body moves from physiologic alarm reaction, that first stage of stress, to a resistance phase. And the resistance phase of the stress response is characterized by maintaining those very same initial stress responses: increase in heart rate, pulse, blood flow, increase in adrenal hormones, so that the body can stay alert and is quick to respond. But as you know, many of our stressors linger and they don't simply come and go, so the body moves into that middle stage of resistance. Now, here's where the problems begin. If those stressors remain, the body can only keep up with the resistance phase so long. It's like revving an engine. You can rev it for so long, but eventually the parts will wear down. And what happens when they do? The body, like an automobile that's pushed to its limits, starts to break apart and enters the exhaustion phase of what Hans Selye termed the stress response. And that is the area where most of disease, as we know it, tends to manifest. Now, I said tends to manifest, but any dysfunction of the body or outright disease starts with alarm reactions that stay too long in the resistance phase, that second phase, that then lead to the exhaustion phase where the body just starts to break down. Now, from a nutritional perspective, if we maintained optimal nutrition, whatever that is, let's just consider that we all agree on what optimal nutrition is for a moment. The body can withstand staying in the resistance phase and delaying the onset indefinitely of the exhaustion phase where outright disease happens. You know, many people say to me, Dr. Wald, I don't understand this. I was fine my whole life. I never had a health problem. And then all of a sudden, I had a stroke. Or then I was diagnosed with cancer or MS or migraines or this or that condition. How did that happen? Now, I think if you were just listening to that conversation about the alarm phase, the resistance, and the exhaustion phase of stress, by the time disease shows up in that exhaustion phase, it has been playing upon the body's physiologic resilience and wearing down the body's physiologic reserves. And then when disease simply seems to just show up, it's a surprise to people. But it doesn't just show up, as you might understand at this point. It's been lingering, the body's been working on it, and when the body cannot manage it any longer, we have this or that disease. And we don't just generally have one disease anymore. We tend to have multiple diseases or dysfunctions. A person may be depressed and they have constipation and dry skin. Some may have cancer and a blood sugar problem and a pH problem all together. I think you get the point that diseases tend to happen in clusters. In fact, that's the term in medicine for the fact that disease rarely just shows up as one problem. It tends to be in clusters. Not all of them show up at the same time that we can recognize them. But if we measure the stress response or look at the end result of the stress response, the disease and the nutritional deficiencies and the nutritional problems that end up with disease, we can understand that it takes time for these problems to happen. Now, it's my opinion that regardless of where you are in your level of health, whether or not you enjoy an excellent level of health currently, and I hope you are, or whether you have one or more health problems that do not seem to go away, the body knows how to heal if given the proper materials. For example, if you've been exposed for a good deal of your life to refined and processed sugars, white flours, nutrient-depleted foods, enzymatically depleted foods, you certainly would stress your pancreas out, particularly specific cells of the pancreas known as the beta cells, and you could end up with everything from insulin resistance issues to outright diabetes. So diabetes or pre-diabetes, which is just as bad, is an example of stress from refined and processed foods, for example, or even air pollution is known to cause diabetes. That has overcome the pancreas beta cells' ability to overcome that stress, and then we end up with disease. You know, another very well-known example that shows what happens when physiologic resilience and our reserve, our ability to manage stressors get out of balance would be loss of bone density. Osteoporosis or osteopenia. The bone density is controlled by an interplay of various hormones. For example, estrogen, testosterone, pregnenolone, progesterone, cortisol, the list goes on. And of course, those hormones are affected by foods, and foods affect hormones, and of course, various vitamins and minerals are moved around based upon hormones, among other things. The stress response is largely a hormonal response. So for example, if you know at least one thing regarding the stress response, it's that there tends to be an increase in cortisol, which is an adrenal hormone that occurs early in the stress response. Now, a lot of people get salivary hormone testing. In fact, they get stress evaluations where they'll have their salivary cortisol, a saliva cortisol checked, along with their another adrenal hormone known as DHEA sulfate. But I think that these tests are mostly a waste, and I'll tell you why. I can assume that everyone living on this planet has some amount of stress, whether or not it shows on a saliva test or not. Generally, the people who have saliva tests recommended to them are people that have chronic problems that have not gone away with other efforts. So on one level, it makes sense that maybe there's a chronic stress response that if identified, you can manage it nutritionally. However, think of it this way. This is very important for you to hear this. This is what I call a clinical pearl, a very important concept that you just do not hear about much at all out there in the media, is that when you do a salivary hormone test for cortisol and or DHEA sulfate, which is the activated form of another adrenal hormone, you may feel and your diseases may look or dysfunctions may look like a poor stress response. But that doesn't mean it's testable at the time you test it. It may take you 2, 5, 10, 25 years of a chronic stress response for your cortisol levels to finally drop in your saliva. But all of the wear and tear that the body has to go through to maintain these levels is not measured on these tests. So practically speaking, if I feel that someone needs support of their adrenals and their stress response, I do not rely on an expensive saliva or DHA sulfate test to tell me that this person may have a problem with their cortisol or eventually may have it, but it may not be measurable yet. On the other hand, if the body is dealing with chronic disease, which is a chronic stress, eventually the adrenal glands may not be able to produce enough cortisol and or enough DHEA, the other adrenal hormone, to manage a stress response. So the body's breaking down, and then when it breaks down to a certain point, then maybe the levels of those salivary hormones may drop. And oftentimes they don't. It's just the way it is. So my blood detective philosophy is that I do not do out-of-pocket expensive tests that I already know the answer to, meaning everyone I deal with their stress response. I support their adrenal glands by identifying and removing stressors upon the body. But these saliva tests have been overblown. And most of you, if you really think about it, that have had these tests done, might find that your practitioner could have easily guessed or would have given you the very same recommendations regardless of what the results of those tests are. That was a bit of a side note. But again, as your own personal blood detective, you need to realize, and I admit this fully, that testing is not everything. Testing may not show everything that's a problem now. Let me give you another common example. Many of you out there are pre-diabetic and don't know it. There is a test known as hemoglobin A1C, which is a 2 to 3 month average of your blood sugar. Now, you may have high blood pressure or you may be borderline hypertensive, which is hypertension. And you may have high blood fats, high blood lipids like cholesterol, LDL, triglycerides, or any combination. So you may have these high blood lipids and you may have borderline high blood pressure. But in order for you to be diagnosed with metabolic syndrome, you also need to have a problem with insulin resistance. Except it's not very common for an individual to have all three of those problems testable at the same time. The body breaks down and the pressure may go back and forth and the blood sugar may go up and down and the blood lipids may go up and down. And eventually when the body's resiliency is overcome by the stressor, whether it's dietary, emotional, physical, you name it, then eventually all three of these tests show problems all at the same time. I have many people that say to me, yes, I know I have one of the three components, Dr. Wolder, or I have two of the three, so my doctor said I don't have metabolic syndrome. Have a nice life. It's just that that's a misinterpretation if we understand that all disease happens in gradations. It happens in small or large amounts over a period of time. And it's important for us to make certain assumptions about what we need to support our general health and well-being, like always, always, always manage the stress response before it starts to take a nosedive and before you're outright diagnosed with a disease. Remember, our so-called healthcare system is not a healthcare system. It is a disease care system. It waits until your body's resiliency has basically given out, and then you have these diseases. One of the things that I do as an experimental interpretation is I compare the results of many of my patients' blood work and other types of tests to ranges of healthy individuals or a younger version, so to speak, of themselves. Because if someone has chronic health problems, I would want them to heal similarly to when they were healthier or younger. So why would I compare them to average men or women their age? I've talked about this on other shows, but what is standard of care in medicine is that your blood work is compared to age-adjusted men and women of your age, in other words. And if your doctor says you have normal testing, that means normal compared to average men and women your age, not normal compared to those with the greatest amount of resiliency against stress, which shows better healing. So if I were to compare you in one of my blood detective reports to healthier ranges, which are based upon studies of healthier individuals that have less disease and a greater capacity to overcome stress, of course, when you are compared to that level of health, you'll have many more abnormalities on your lab work. Now, follow me here. Those so-called abnormalities that I might find on your blood work comparing you to healthier versions are identifying you, theoretically speaking, to an earlier stage of the stress response. So if you're interested in prevention and preemptive living, eating well, taking nutritional supplements, but knowing that your chemistry is staying in a much healthier reserve, so it has a greater capacity to deal with life's stressors, you would want to compare yourself to a very healthy population. You know, as a 51-year-old man, I am not excited about comparing my laboratory work to average 51-year-old men. If we compared the average 51-year-old laboratory work that's normal in that age group to the average 20-year-old, it would be considered very abnormal compared to a 20-year-old in many respects. I think you're getting the idea here, at least I hope you are, that we always want to shoot for a healthier range. Yes, it's going to show more abnormalities if you compare yourself to a healthier reserve, a greater capacity to deal with stress, which means you generally would have an ability to delay the onset of various types of acute and chronic degenerative diseases, and would give you more time to naturally manage them. Which is another point. I'm continually surprised that some individuals that see me, they have an unrealistic expectation of how long it might take for, let's say, nutrition and lifestyle measures or those improvements to help their problems. I mean, when you think about it, the body might have developed hypertension or insulin resistance or eczema or psoriasis or rheumatoid arthritis or cancers or diabetes or various neurologic and immune disorders or infections after years of fighting on different levels and finally giving up, showing you obvious disease. So I think it's a pretty safe bet that anyone who promises immediate quick results in a week, in a month, in 6 months, in a year with some of these sorts of problems is probably not being authentic. I mean, medications, drugs are meant to manage symptoms so a person feels better right away. On the surface, that sounds like a good thing, but healing simply takes longer, and to heal the chronic exhausted stress response, which is another way of saying to manage persistent health problems and disease, simply takes time. For example, the cells that line our stomach take approximately 6 months to completely replace themselves. So if theoretically speaking, if you're exposed to the right nutrition and right healing methods to manage, let's say, low stomach acid or lack of stomach acid or absorption problems, you can theoretically cure those in about 6 months. If you have a bone density issue, in an ideal situation, your bone cells replace themselves in approximately 18 to 24 months. Let me give you one other example. Your intestinal cells are replacing themselves constantly. They are constantly exposed to foods and the sloughing off a process of things moving through the bowel. So the cells that comprise the wall of your gut are designed to replace themselves very, very quickly. My point in giving you these examples of tissues that replace themselves, their cells, over certain periods of time, is that very few individuals, in my experience, properly manage their overall stress response, identifying various areas throughout the entire body that are affected by our lifespan and by living. In other words, by stressors. And that's why many of these health problems are taking far longer than they need to resolve themselves. So what I'm proposing to you is that the best way to assess the body's response to stressors is to perform a variety of tests that look at most body systems at one time, and preferably at the same time, so you can see the interplay of how the organs manage their chemistries and relationships, their coordinated efforts to maintain itself. And lack of that maintenance will result in various abnormalities on tests or result in a variety of subjective symptoms. So that's why I'll always have my patients fill out very, very detailed questionnaires, which I review with them in even more detail, and we look at chemistry so that we can identify your unique way that your body is either managing or not managing the stress response. If we divide the body up in pieces, the cardiovascular system, the immune system, the neurologic system, the endocrine system, and so on, we have artificially compartmentalize the body, and then we wonder why things don't heal the way we want to. And this mistake is a fundamental, I think it's a mistake, because it's not consistent and it's not true to how the body's designed. We don't have separate organ systems. They're only separate based on how those who study anatomy have artificially divided these systems up, simply because they're very hard to learn. So we have a compartmentalized medical system. But sometimes in natural medicine, we tend to compartmentalize things as well. And compartmentalization is a term that gives us a false idea of how the body's made. So therefore, if we're using even the most natural of therapies to manage one system and failing to recognize its relationship to other systems, is why we tend to get short-lived results. Sometimes we do get lucky, though. I want to now move to another very practical, important concept when dealing with health, because chronic health problems, and also when health problems begin, you know, there's a starting point, and there are different lifestyle approaches that should be focused on where the body is at during our lifespan in terms of dealing with stress and disease. So I break them up into the following categories. And they're really lifestyle measures, so we'll call them lifestyle maintenance approaches. Those are the things that we would do to maintain ourselves if we're relatively disease-free and symptom-free. So we would, again, I'm going to speak in general terms here, we would eat right. Meaning we would not eat trans and saturated fats or white flours or refined and processed sugars. We would eat organically as often as possible. We would keep fit. We would sleep well. And we would avoid stressors in our life that would sap our vitality. And those particular type of lifestyle measures are what I call lifestyle maintenance. And there are some of you out there listening to the show who are perfectly free of symptoms and diseases, and the way you approach your health might be in this category of lifestyle maintenance. Then there's sort of an intermediate stage of lifestyle intervention. Now, This is the stage of stress effects upon the body that most practitioners and people, patients, you know, think about when they're thinking about any sort of therapy. In other words, the lifestyle intervention stage of the work I do with people is because people are starting to develop, individuals are starting to develop chronic symptoms. So they would need to be much more specific about their dietary choices. So in other words, they simply wouldn't, as I said in the lifestyle maintenance section here just a moment ago, they wouldn't simply eat right in a general sense. They might have to eat more of a ketogenic diet or a paleo diet or a food combination way of eating or an anti-inflammatory approach or some combination of those. In other words, more specific lifestyle intervention. The reason I'm discussing these different stages of how you or I might approach your health problems is because they tend to provide us with more specific nutrition, more specific diet, more specific lifestyle measures to reverse the situation. Now, in the lifestyle intervention stage, where again, someone's in the early throes of stress-causing degeneration, and we're thinking about more specific dietary, lifestyle, and maybe nutritional supplement suggestions beyond the basic things we would do when we're perfectly well in the early stages of maintenance, maintaining ourselves, the body still has a very strong capacity to rebuild itself. It has a good deal of what's known as metabolic reserve. So that's the healing phase that we can still manage. But then, as stressors affect our body over the course of time, and we're moving from that first stage of we're really healthy, we are maintaining ourselves, then we move into the intervention stage, meaning we must intervene because the body is starting to have some difficulty. We have to get more specific with things. We tend to then get into the next stage, which I call the augmented lifestyle intervention. This is when we're using very, very specific therapies and testing and techniques that natural medicine or traditional medicine might have, because the health problems and the stress impacts upon the body, again, whether they're physical, toxic, inflammatory, infectious, you name it, are very, very strong. And the body starts to lose its capacity to manage itself. So we have to use things from the outside in much, much more detail and focus to make up for what your body may not be able to do. And then we get into what I call rescue intervention. This is the end stage where a practitioner or you as an individual might need to seek the modern medical system or at the very least more advanced disease reversing and disease focused strategies you might have in natural medicine. In other words, the body is severely impacted. It is beyond the exhaustion stage of stress and wear and tear on the body. So it's very important that when I speak to individuals, we identify where a person falls into in terms of their capacity to heal themselves, their capacity to manage stress. Again, it starts with maintenance. You're healthy, you're good. You just need to be, you know, maintain a clean, you know, whatever that is for you, and you're doing well. And then you start to require a change in your diet. Maybe you get mild indigestion. You avoid eating fruits with your carbs, or you might need more sleep than you used to or more exercise than you used to. And that's the when your body is starting to lose its resiliency to manage stress and tissues start to break down. And then it goes from that intervention stage to what I call the augmented lifestyle intervention stage, where we all would require in this stage more specific types of elements in foods, more omega-3s, maybe more magnesium, that sort of thing. But that augmented stage is the stage right before the rescue intervention stage, where everything starts to fall apart. Now, what I think the advantage is by using a natural healthcare, which is focused on improving your resiliency to manage stressors, is that it can move you backwards potentially from severe disease and dysfunction into the augmented lifestyle stage, then back into the intervention stage, and for some people, right back to the maintenance stage where they've reversed a dramatic amount of health problems. Now, I personally believe I've done that managing my multiple sclerosis, which I was diagnosed with when I was 18 years old, and now being 51, never being on a medication, not having any symptoms of MS, having no physical limitations whatsoever. In fact, I run marathons and do triathlons and I lift weights, is something that takes work and it takes a bit of knowledge, but it's possible. I think it's important to point out right now that we're talking about the stress response, and disease and dysfunction is a sign and a signal that the body has a reduced capacity to deal with stressors. But the stress response is meant to protect the body. But as I said earlier, when we're exposed to chronic, continual stressors of different types, it wears down our resiliency and we start to break down. But when the body initially responds to a stress, let's say by increasing blood pressure, that is a throwback to our evolutionary development where that increase in blood pressure would increase blood flow to our muscles, which would cause them to react more quickly and our attention span would improve and we can get out of the way of danger. That's that initial alarm phase. But if stressors are chronic, like so many are in our daily lives today, we go into the resistance phase. We're revving that engine pretty steadily, but you can do that only so long before you wear down your reserves. And then finally, when the body cannot handle it anymore, more disease, more symptoms and problems show up during the exhaustion phase. The key in managing stress upon the body is to recognize that regardless of the type of stressor, whether, again, it's electromagnetic, inflammatory, infectious, degenerative, nutritional, you name it, stressors impact a basic physiologic response regardless of the type of stress. In other words, and I'm oversimplifying here, there is a system in our body known as the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis. Say that three times fast. Now, this hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis is basically our stress antenna. So whether it's, again, any type of stressor, all of the stressors impact that axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis. And in each person and at different times, one or more of those hormonal and neurologic stress responses will deal with the immediate stress. For example, if a person puts themselves under intense exercise stress, they would affect the thyroid portion, certainly the thyroid portion of the hypothalamic adrenal pituitary thyroid axis, let's say more than another part of that axis. And by doing that, the person has a faster metabolic rate during rest and sleep, and it helps maintain weight. However, when I say we have this axis, and I'll say it again, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, that's our stress antenna. These components that I mentioned, they're all together and they act as one coordinated effort. When the body is overwrought with stress, then that hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis starts to break down. And that results in, among other things, breakdown of tissues, which happens through oxidative stress and inflammation and wear and tear. It increases the body's need for nutrition. If that increased need is not recognized and managed, then the body breaks itself down, and we have a vicious cycle of stress response that looks like whatever disease you want to call it. If the stressor in your life genetically seems to affect your blood vessels more than, let's say, your big toe, then you'll have hardening of your arteries and hypertension, for example, or a stroke or heart attack. If the genetic predisposition of your body and stress response is such that you have weakness in your central nervous system, you might have what's known as demyelination or breakdown of the covering of your nervous system known as the white matter, and that might result in multiple sclerosis. So I think you get the idea that depending upon how your body uniquely deals with stress, you have the conditions and diseases and symptoms and signs that you have. You know, we talk a lot in natural medicine about balance and about, we use a term called homeostasis. And for those of you that may not have heard of that term, homeostasis is a term that refers to balance. Except there is no balance, at least from my opinion, my view, in the body. There is imbalanced balance. In other words, to deal with a certain stress, your blood pressure might go up and your blood sugar might go down. So that you could, depending on your perspective, you might view that as a balancing act, but there's nothing equal about it. There's no balance. There's no homeostasis there. The reason I mention this is because there's another term which more accurately reflects how the body responds. And using the example I just mentioned about blood pressure increasing with a stress, let's say as it should, and let's say blood sugar decreasing so that you have energy to deal with the stress, let's say move out of the way, that is called homeoresis. Homeoresis is imbalanced balance. And I think it's important that we use the right semantics when we think about our body's response, because it's more accurate. And if we understand and use the right terms to describe how our body responds to life, I personally believe that that helps our body heal. The language we use matters. So that word was homeoresis, which is imbalanced balance. Now, a minute or so ago, I talked about the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis. That means the hypothalamus, which is an area higher up in the nervous system, gives messages, neurohormonal signals, they're called, to the pituitary gland. And the pituitary gland is a gland in the body that produces a dozen or so different hormones that play upon practically every organ system of the body. And it's a feedback. So we have the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal gland. And then that hypothalamic area of the brain, or I should say the brain stem, and the pituitary gland trigger the adrenal glands to respond. So we've reached the hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal, and now the thyroid gland. Now, by the way, the reactions and the interplay of these parts, they're not in the order that I'm mentioning. No one quite knows how the body responds. Maybe the thyroid is initially the responder to stress, and it impacts those other parts of the hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal, thyroid axis. But the point is that I wanted to review with you several of the more common conditions that can result and help you identify whether or not you have an increased stress response in the earlier stages, which doesn't make it any better, by the way, necessarily, or you have a more chronic stress response and you tend to have health problems that are similar or identical to what tends to happen in the chronic stress response. So let me say it another way. If we have increased stress response or increased hypothalamic pituitary axis problems, we might suffer from depression. We might have eating disorders. We might have a tendency to be obsessive and compulsive or have anxiety, which I see a lot. Many people have anxiety. They don't even recognize it as anxiety. You might have issues with drug and alcohol withdrawal. You might have diabetes mellitus. You might have weight gain in your gut or metabolic syndrome. These are all examples of increased activity of that hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis, which is abbreviated, by the way, HPA. It doesn't include the term thyroid in there, but it should be in that HPA. Hyperthyroidism, or too much thyroid function, that's another example of increased activity of the stress response. And so would be hyperactivity of the adrenal glands. Even traditional medicine recognizes that a condition called Cushing syndrome, which is a hyperadrenal condition, is from increased activity of the HPA axis. And decreased activity of the HPA axis from stress would generally result in adrenal weakness or very atypical types of depression that tend to be seasonal. Chronic fatigue syndrome is an example of decreased HPA axis, fibromyalgia, premenstrual tension syndrome, nicotine withdrawal, low thyroid function, autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, and asthma and eczema. Now, you might have to listen to the show more than once to get that list clear, but here's the takeaway. Given your responses to detailed stress questionnaires or a very thorough intake with your healthcare provider, that healthcare provider should be able to categorize pretty clearly what conditions, what signs and symptoms you have that would help identify how you're managing stress from a physiologic perspective such that you can identify weak organ systems. And if you identify weak or not just weak organ systems, but organ systems that are not weak yet, but are overworking, you can then target nutritional and lifestyle therapies. So it's time that we all became a bit more concerned, I think, with the details under the surface, recognizing the stress response for what it is. It is a killer eventually, and it sucks our quality of life along the way when the stress response is chronic and when we do not recognize as individuals its effects upon our system. Now, by the way, before you have any health problem or any symptom or any problem you can see, that's called a sign in healthcare. That's the medical term for something you can see, like eczema would be something you can see, is that it all comes down to prioritizing how to manage the building up of your body to get a handle on the stress response. You're not going to find that answer in a simple saliva test for cortisol and DHEA. Now, speaking of hormones, cortisol and DHEA, two hormones, I certainly spend a lot of time thinking about and applying the use of hormones to help us manage stress response. So, for example, a hormone known as pregnenolone tends to improve our body's ability to deal with chronic stress. It's an anabolic steroid. It builds up the body. DHEA is also an anabolic helping to build up the body. Now, I'm not recommending that everyone just run out and take these hormones. I personally prefer to help the body or help the individual build up the entirety of their body such that they can produce the hormones themselves. Because even if you take bioidentical hormones, which most of us recognize as a better version of hormones, at least in natural healthcare, those bioidentical hormones are still not your hormones. They still carry some risks. I think it is safer and better for an individual to support their organ tissues that make hormones naturally and what's known as endogenously. And that's not to say I do not use various types of hormones. It depends on where the person is in their dis-ease or disease process. So when you hear practitioners or things that you read or hear that say, this is the best way to deal with this condition or this inflammation or that infection, the best way is, I believe, whatever it is that your body needs for your body's needs. And by paying attention to that and tailoring the diet, tailoring your sleep, tailoring the type of water you drink, tailoring your supplementation to a holistic viewpoint and one that promotes homeoresis, which is balanced imbalance, is the most reasonable way of maintaining your health, reversing dis-ease and disease. Now, we all know that natural medicine has quite a lot of options. I personally think the most amount of options compared to any other healing technique. We have all sorts of foods that we can look at and we can manipulate in either juice forms or raw forms or cooked forms. And then there's nutritional supplementation, and there's hundreds of types of nutritional supplements, if not even thousands. We have so much in our armamentarium to draw from to improve our general health and well-being that it would really take someone who's uneducated to not get results with natural medicine. But if you're an individual who has looked at a lot of those things and still is suffering from or has complaints of dysfunction, symptom, signs, disease, then you might want to consider assessing your physiology and your stress response and the rest of your organ systems in a bit more detail. Sometimes my patients will say to me, Dr. Wald, I am doing all the right things. How come I'm not better? Well, number one, there's no guarantees that although you think on the surface you may be doing the right things, that you are doing the right things. Again, if you malabsorb, for example, and you're taking the greatest nutrients on the planet and juicing and doing everything else right, if you're not absorbing it, it's wrong. So that might need to be managed because the stress response might have caused malabsorption. The stress response certainly increases nutritional needs. So many individuals that sit before me, they're taking the right stuff, but they're taking the wrong doses. They might be taking and eating certain nutrients and foods, but in the wrong amounts for what they specifically need. I mean, the bottom line, I think, is this. If you're doing what you think is right, and you've been doing it for long enough, and you're still not fully well, you might consider that what you're doing is not quite individualized enough or personalized enough for you. And we've all heard the definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Whether it's your exercise and not getting a result, but it on the surface looks right, but you're not, you don't have the stamina you want, or you're taking the best nutrients and eating what you feel is the right way, but you still have chronic health issues, then the chances are things need to be cleaned up a bit more. So the next time you visit your healthcare provider, and hopefully one that can do laboratory work and who's qualified to properly interpret laboratory work, you might want to request a variety of assessments. I'll just rattle off a few of them. You want a complete blood count. You want a comprehensive metabolic panel. You want a vitamin D3 level checked. You want all of your thyroid indices checked, something called homocysteine, ferritin, C-reactive protein cardio. You want a body composition test. And by the way, if you listen to my prior shows on laboratory testing, I review each of these in great detail. And beyond those tests, which are basic, whatever other tests you need should be based upon an evaluation through questionnaires and a detailed conversation of what you specifically need, that beyond guesswork, you'd really want to look at some objective tests. So I think that'll wrap it up for today's conversation about the stress response. The next show is going to be on a topic that many of you maybe have never thought of, because it's just not, doesn't seem to be out there, and I'm wondering why. And it has to do with what's called transdermal nutrition. Nutritional combinations that are formulated to be absorbed through the skin, and how they might be useful to bypass absorption blocks in the intestinal tract, and that might provide a very focused effect upon specific areas on the body where you can apply topical nutritional products. So thank you everyone for joining me today. This is Dr. Michael Wald. If you want to visit with me, you can call me at 914-242-8844. Let me know your show topics that you'd like to hear. Email them to me at info@blooddetective.com. I'm the director of nutritional and longevity health at Integrated Nutrition of Mount Kisco. The website is www.integratednutritionny.com. Have a great day, and I'll see you next time. Show you stuff.